Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello. Hello, and welcome back to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. My name is Cliff.
Hello, and I'm Brett. Two hellos from you this time.
Two hello, hello, that was nice. Hello, hello.
Did I ever tell you about the time when I played in a tournament when I was a kid, and we got to the semi-final, beat the team that we're playing against, so we got the final. But in the semi-final, there was this team came on and had like a ghetto blaster with them. And what they would do when they were warming up, they would play the theme from Match of the Day while they were warming up. Yeah.
But they're like all like kicking it like in like it was slow motion.
It was insane. We were just pissing myself laughing. It was just insane. I mean,
how old were you?
How old? I think I was about 11 or 12.
Who were the team?
I can't remember who the team were, but I remember we were beating them. And it was like a seven-a-side tournament or something. And it was like an all-day thing. So we played loads of matches, got the semi-final, and this team trotted out to the Match of the Day. I mean, was that the manager's input, do you think? This will get them right going.
Yeah.
I tell you what we should do. We should play the Match of the Day theme tune.
I'll make them think that they're playing at the top flight.
And then it skipped a bit and the Grange Hill theme tune came on.
Then it just started like pelting there. Catapults at each other and that. Pulling each other's ties.
This is going in a completely different direction, but can you remember on Grange Hill where the guy got loft insulation on him and he was really itchy for like loads of episodes?
Brett, I'm sure I've mentioned this before, and my dad will tell us when he gets in touch after this episode, but I was forbidden from watching Grange Hill as a child.
Mm? Mm-hmm. Why?
Adult themes.
It's not on, is it? You wonder if that true?
Uh-huh.
Can't believe that.
Never watched it? I've got nothing else to add, but I would imagine that loft, maybe it was asbestos.
It could well have been, but to my child and even now eyes, it's loft insulation, and there's nothing wrong with that, is there? If you ever go in the loft, it looks lovely to jump into. Obviously, you wouldn't do that because you'd come through the roof, but it looks very nice, doesn't it?
It looks like, is it like wire wool? I think it reminds me of that.
Yeah, it's like like orangey color,
The orange stuff. I know what you mean, Brett. I just didn't see it on the telly on Grange Hill.
There's nothing better than getting in the loft, is there, Cliff? It's probably my favourite thing to do, getting in the loft.
It's got a sense of danger and excitement in equal measure, hasn't it? Like it has.
It's like looking in people's drawers, other people's drawers. I as a kid, I used to love looking in people's drawers.
I'm going
to
keep
you know, the drawer where they'd keep all the crap, like little tiny toys.
I'm staying silent on this matter.
Are those little, you know, those things that you get in breakfast cereal, like the Snap, Crackle and Pop Men or whatever. But the loft is a bigger version of the drawer, I find, with like mystical toys from like long ago.
Well, I know we talked about you getting in my loft with my mum and dad's before like COVID happened. And I was just talking to my mum the other day, and you know, the stuff's still there, obviously. It's still there. So much stuff in there that you would love to explore.
I'm going to have Here's to do a question. It right now.
Have you ever been in another man's loft?
Have I been in... Well, I've been in somebody else's loft, yes.
Not a man, I guess. A lady's loft.
Yes, I could, you would assume that you would call it a lady's loft, yes. So, yes, I have been in a lady's loft. Have you been in another man's loft? I have another loft story after this.
Only, like, you know... There's often a thing, and it happened again on Twitter this week, where people go, "Oh, what was it when you were a kid that made you realize like there was richer people than you, or you were working class or whatever?"
Mm-hmm.
I think when I went to junior school, everyone in me junior school was on free dinners, I suppose. I didn't have packed lunch, I had free dinners. But when I went to senior school and I realized like I was in a very small minority of people on free dinners, and that was probably that. But also, my other thing was when you went round to people's kids' houses from your school and there was patio doors.
Patio doors?
Yeah. Patio doors and people who went on foreign holidays, because we never did that as kids. Anyway, the other thing that made us think of it was every now and then you'd go to someone's house and their loft was converted and there was like into a playroom or something like that.
Yeah, I know. That was exciting.
But it does take away the frisson of like danger of
finding toys,
an unkempt loft, which is, I presume, what you're talking about, where anything
that is exactly what I'm talking about.
Buy a torch or maybe a little lamp that's hanging there that you have to switch on,
just a bulb. Generally, it's just a bulb that can easily set everything on fire,
just a raw
hanging bulb. Yes, that's the kind of loft I'm talking about. But our mate Gary Tiernan, he used to tell a story about his brother. Was it De Niro's nightclub
where he went in the ceiling?
Yeah. Well, for people who don't know, his brother somehow found a way to get into the loft of this nightclub. And what they would do is they'd order their drinks, loads of drinks, and then they'd take them and make their way to the loft and sit in the loft. Drink their drinks in there.
Through the bathroom though, and then they go in the toilet and then go in, like lift the ceiling tiles off and climb into the
climb into the loft. Insane. So yeah, there's our loft stories for the week, but we've got another story, haven't we? Twitter madness.
Before you talk about the Twitter, while we were still semi on the subject of football.
Semi lofts.
With semi-loft, Frank Worthington died. And
he did.
He is one of the greatest players I never got the chance to see other than on TV. I would love to have seen him in the flesh. And I didn't realise until the day he played for Sunderland.
Didn't he? I think 1982. I think he played for Sunderland. He was one of my dad's favourite. He's one of my dad's favourite players here. And he's read his book and everything. And he loved them. So he was over the moon when he signed for Sunderland. But he was one of them Mavericks, wasn't he?
Yeah, 19 games for Sunderland and a couple of goals, but apparently played a big part in keeping us up or whatever happened that year.
Yeah.
But yeah, also, if you look at the pictures of him playing for Sunderland, he really already looks like he's not a footballer anymore.
He's a big fan of Elvis and that, wasn't he? He used to wear like... Yeah. I mean, I've seen some of the goals that he scored and they're absolute crackers, aren't they?
Did you ever see him on Celebrity Footballers Come Dine With Me?
No, but you have talked about this before. Who else was he on?
Fashionu, Neil Ruddock, Carlton Palmer,
and
Frank Worthington. So it's a bit weird in that the other three all played together in the same era. Yeah. And one guy from the 70s was in it. But he's so good. If you can find it, I've tried to find it on YouTube today, and there's a couple of little clips, but it doesn't show that I only had a quick look, but I couldn't find the full thing. But if it's ever repeated or you can find it anywhere, got to watch it. It's so good.
Yeah.
He's a man who has never cooked a single thing in his life, and he's meant to be cooking a three-course meal for these three other fellas. He's so out of his depth, but he's like trying to style it out as well. Like he's doing, honestly, it's so good. The thing that always gets me is he's making a starter. He's going, "I'm making avocado vinaigrette." And he doesn't know what vinegar is. I think he means vinaigrette, like a vinegar dressing, obviously. And all he does is he gets half an avocado and drizzles malt vinegar on the top.
Sounds good.
And I think he's got his daughter there with him who's going like, Dad, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, oh, they'll be all right. They won't know.
You haven't got a clue.
Yeah, that was good. Honestly,
and I bet that's, they're sitting there going, oh, this is lovely, this, Frank.
Well, I think because it's like Neil Ruddock and stuff, they all take the piss out of each other. So,
yeah.
What a legend. So, yeah, RIP to Frank.
We keep going back to the football, don't we? Because
not a football podcast.
It's not a football podcast, but there you go. So I watched the Newcastle game on, when was it? It was Saturday, late Saturday night.
Fucking
hell. And it was quite possibly the worst performance by any football team I've ever seen in my whole entire life.
You should put like the, I know people always say this when clubs are in trouble, but just put the under 21s out. Like, in fact, get and put the under 21s out, under 23s now, I know it is. But also managed by the under 23s manager, and it would be better.
Well, I mean, Wade Sullen have been really bad, and the only thing that I can remember of being as bad as was when we were under Grayson that time. Fuck, I mean, they were just really bad. I mean, they didn't even want to try and win the ball back. There was like no appetite to win the ball back or anything.
It was awful. It was like we were on the pitch and just thought, like in 90 minutes we'll be off this pitch, like we just it's only 90 minutes we'll be back on the bus or whatever. It was so like it was
bad.
They had no intention of doing anything other than showing up, and that was it.
That's it. So I mean, we're two Sullen fans, so we, you know, we're not the right people to sort of explain or describe what's going on. So so we'll let Newcastle fans do it, shall we?
Yeah, go on then.
It's still good.
Was that a phone into the radio by any chance?
If it was, it would have been the best radio call in ever. Is it? It's just on Twitter. Just on Twitter, some guy. You know how people vent everything now?
Yeah, I've got a vent.
So, yes, that's how Newcastle fans
did he call him a fucking melon sad. At one point in that?
I think he called him at the end a bell end.
Oh, I thought he said melon. He's a fucking melon.
He's a fucking bell end. Fuck off.
Fuck off.
Let's do the Twitter thing because we're going to have to get on to Luke in a bit.
So
yesterday it was Mr. William Shatner's 90th birthday yesterday, wasn't it?
Grand old age.
And me and you, we've always loved this thing. So we put it on Twitter and we put on his cover version of Rocket Man, didn't we? Which we've talked about really. We've talked about it really from being like, I don't know, 18, 19, something like that. It was really like early, wasn't
Whenever we first saw it as teenagers,
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people had seen it before. I think it's been on Family Guy and stuff, but I didn't realise that before. So we put it on anyway yesterday, and so far it's getting 60,000 views plus. I think so. It was going a bit mental on the Twitter stuff yesterday, wasn't it? Some nice things people were saying in that. You know, some good.
You know what? The funniest thing
I put on happy birthday. Hold on, I put on happy birthday, William Shatner, and here he is with like the greatest cover song ever, the greatest cover version ever. And some people are like, oh, I haven't seen this before, that's great. Other people are, this is not a very good cover.
Yeah, no, you cannot think this is good.
What do you call people who haven't got a sense of irony? Morons, that's what it is.
Do you seriously think this is the greatest cover ever?
But yeah, thank you to Mr. William Shatner for that, like, because 60,000 people have saw who we are, hopefully, and that'll be good.
I know, but that's what I think the funniest thing is. So 60,000 people watched it. It's been retweeted thousands of times and liked hundreds of times and all of that kind of thousands, hundreds, whatever. I think I got them the wrong way around. But also, I clicked on the Twitter for the analytics of it. It said, people who followed you as a direct result of this tweet won.
Good result. It's not really worth it, is it?
How does it work? So that's social media for you. That's social media for
you. What can you do? Eh?
So I thought the funny thing was some of the people that replied who tweeted it. Steve Evarts, the man who in Ken Loach's looking for Cantona. Boris Johnson's brother, he liked it. DJ Jaguar Skills, who's really, really like, he retweeted it. So there's some like totally random, like semi-famous or famous people tweeted it. Anyway, we shall move on because in the waiting room, we have...
In the waiting room? Do we have a waiting
that?
Room?
It's called that. We have our friend of the show, friend of the podcast, and singer of the band The Mariners, who we played on the podcast early on when we started playing music, Luke. And we invited him on to talk about Help, the Beatles film and album.
Yes.
Which he wanted us to talk about. We're both big Beatles fans, so we wanted to do that.
We're quite happy, aren't we?
Quite happy to do that. So I'm gonna admit his presence. How are you doing?
Not bad, are you?
Yeah.
Good,
right. I'm all right.
Nice. Where is your help?
Here we go. I've got it on.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Oh, yes.
I'm boiling out as well because I've got one of the old beetle turtlenecks underneath as well. Absolutely roasting, but yeah, I'm all right.
It's all worth it, mate, isn't it?
That's it.
we said you wanted to talk about Help by the Beatles, film and album / soundtrack. Why did you want us to do that?
Well, you'd already done Hard Day's Night. Sure, I don't know, there's different things. I like to chat about plenty of things in life, and some of them are mainly either football or music. Mm-hmm. And my football club, well, it's not the most interesting stuff to talk about, Notts County, really. I don't think it's got a global appeal for your audience.
We did think about doing that, though, Luke, didn't we?
We talked about it, didn't we? But I don't know if that would just be kind of just for me and you two just talking about our teams and that.
Yeah. Talk about Tommy Johnson.
Exactly. The legend is Tommy Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the last time the first time even that I saw this film. I think it was probably the first time I knew who the Beatles were, or their faces anyway, not necessarily the music. Probably as like a kid on a bank holiday or something. Can you remember?
It's got a very sort of Sunday afternoon television sort of feel to it.
Yeah.
You know, the colour of it all and everything about it and the way it's done in the audio, it's got a very Sunday afternoon sort of feel to me. And I was thinking, I've watched it 3 or 4 times this week. And again, just this morning, I was just watching it for a bit. And I did think that it felt like a Sunday afternoon. Dad's on the sofa fast asleep after having a roast dinner. That sort of feel of a film. And I think it was the first Beatles film I saw. And I think that's probably because as a proper youngster, you may be a little bit snobby about black and white films.
I don't know if it's snobby. You're just not used to it, are you? You don't like.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. For our generation, it's a bit strange, isn't it? I love black and white films now, and I love 50s and 60s sort of films, style documentaries, loads of Ken Loach stuff and all that, and Hard Day's Night. But I think Help holds its own.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't enjoy it at first. I love Hard Day's Night. It's one of my favorite films, probably in my top 10 films, like in everything.
I'd agree.
But the first half an hour, I think, is pretty poor. But once they start going to different places, I think it's absolutely superb.
It takes a bit of time to get going.
Yeah.
And I'd also say that last half hour starts to drag a little bit, but the middle bit where all the songs are, the middle section of the film, it's superb.
Yeah,
and some of those videos with like where they're playing songs, for example, that's some of the best footage as a like individual song videos of the Beatles there is.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes the film for me. Those clips of them in the snow at the army like training center and all of that kind of stuff where they're doing the songs and they're like little music videos, which are so massively ahead of that time because nobody else did that.
Yeah.
And they only kind of did them because they were part of a like a big mainstream movie. And like you said before, the look and feel of the film as a whole, the Technicolor kind of aspect of it, and it's almost kind
screen. I really like the start, me. That's what I liked. I know what you guys are saying in that. And the whole film looks absolutely brilliant. But I like the start when I'm like walking into the house and stuff like that. And then, you know, there's four different doors and things.
Uh-huh. I love that first bit, like the premise of them all going in the house, and then inside the house, it's all one long big room, and they've all got the different areas. That initial setup bit is great.
Reason I really love Hard Day's Night is because you almost get to see the Beatles for who they are, and the quick wit and things like that. And there's less of that in this film for me. I think it's more like set pieces, isn't it? Yep. And I think that's got something to do with the
there's a lot of silliness to help, really.
And it's like slapstick.
Yeah, very slapstick. And I think I know that the John in particular said that they were stoned for most of it, and they struggled to sort of have any focus when they were recording it. But I think, again, watching it sort of, I watch Hard Day's Night on a regular basis, and watching them sort of quite close together, there's no plot, there's no real plot. I know they'll say there is a plot to it. There's no plot to it, is it? It's just how many different locations can we shoot videos in?
It's a string of set pieces, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what they were saying. Or where would be a good place to go? Let's go to the Bahamas. Let's go to the Alps. Let's do all this kind of stuff.
We've never been skiing, so they went skiing.
Let's do that. I mean, but if someone offered you a film or whatever, you'd go, let's go here, let's go there.
I'm absolutely not knocking it.
You wouldn't want to just do it down the road, would you? Travel a little bit with it. They had to try and do something different, I guess, as well. Yeah. Like, you've got to remember, Hard Day's Night was like 11 months before, came out 11 months before. So by the time they started writing Help and started working on all the ideas for it, Hard Day's Night was still fresh in the mind, so you couldn't just go and do exactly the same thing again. I heard an interview where Lennon said they just felt like they were extras in their own film. Yeah, I don't think that was necessarily a bad thing, because there were some big characters and some good actors in there. I think I think Victor Spinetti's and Roy Kinnear's, I think those two characters sort of carry it in one way.
Yeah,
and I think they're both really good in it.
I think Roy Kinnear's good.
He's fantastic in it. And then Ella LeBron takes it in a different direction. So the fact that they were like supposedly extras in their own film, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, the first film was all about them and their characters, for and also introducing them to an extent to an American audience who, when the deal was signed to make the film, they weren't huge. So that was kind of part of the reason for Hard Day's Night to be made, and obviously touched on what Beatlemania was all about. They're huge stars in this one. You don't need to set the scene of who they are. You don't need all of that character building and all of that kind of stuff. By this point, you know the four Beatles and which one's which and what their different character traits are meant to be. And this film just plonks them in the middle of an absurd plot with some actually good actors around it. Like you say, Roy Kinnear, I think, is brilliant in everything he's in. He's superb in this. And Eleanor Bron, the lovely, exotic Eleanor Bron. Oh my!
Yeah, you can't complain with her, definitely not. But what it reminded me of, I love the Pink Panther films. I love those films, and it kind of reminds us of those type of films a little bit, you know, chasing around this ring and stuff like that. And that's what it reminded me of. But I still really like it. I think it's a nice film to watch, I think, isn't it? You still get a little bit of the Beatles in there.
You still have a smile on your face when you
Exactly.
And that's the same with any Beatles. It's like I can't hide my love for McCartney. Every time McCartney comes on the screen, and he just does one of those little wry McCartney smiles, it makes me smile. I just can't help it. I just think he's just perfect in just about every single way. There's obviously a bit of man love going on there and all that sort of thing.
the other thing that I noticed as well is Lennon's glasses in there. First of all, in the soup, aren't they? He's eating some soup, the little round glasses and stuff. And then when he's kind of dressed up, you know, he's in disguise, he's in like a wheelchair as an old man, he's got them on as well.
Also, Ringo Starr looks exactly like alcoholic Ringo Starr in the late 70s. It's a brilliant
character.
Those National Health specs, they became the rage, and they were selling out left, right, and centre after the film was on. But there's a few things in the film where there's little nods to the future. So there's a spec. Mm-hmm. But did you notice the guy that's in their big house? The gardener that's like mm-hmm. got the little tea from George Harrison. Mm-hmm. He almost looks like exactly like George Harrison looks like on the All Things Must Pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he does. Uh-huh,
it's almost like they've come to do that, and George has thought all those years later, oh, let's go for that look.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And they've got the brass band nod in there as well, where they've got that sort of feel of what's Pepper's coming in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they foresaw stuff like that in advance, or whether it's just coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that I read is that this film kind of influenced, like, you know, things that came after. One, which was quite surprising, was the Batman TV series.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sort of really influenced that, which I didn't.
I think the colours, you know, and the kind of the action,
yeah, the colours,
and fighting,
for sure,
and all of that. I read that the Indian restaurant scene is the first time that George Harrison heard Indian music, but
yeah,
I don't know whether that's true.
I've heard that. Apparently, he went to some sort of guild school or something in London, and basically asked for lessons from somebody.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of the filming of that, Ticket to Ride could have easily been on Rubber Soul.
Yep.
You know, in terms of the sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Help is very much a transition. I think if you compare it to Hard Day's Night, they seem a million miles apart.
Yeah.
But then Help also seems quite a distance away from Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
Apart from maybe Ticket to Ride.
But yeah, I mean, I like Help as an album. Me, I like it. I like listening to the ones. I don't think I ever listen to the Beatles enough. Do you know what I mean? I always have this way. I should think. I'm thinking myself, I should listen to the Beatles more. I'll keep telling myself that I should listen to the Beatles more.
How could you listen to the Beatles more?
You know, I don't know how I could possibly do it, but I'm trying to do it. But
I go through phases like that, though, where all of a sudden you listen to the Beatles and you think, oh my, why don't I listen to these?
All the time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it.
But you do, maybe you just, every now and then you need a slight sort of, not a break from it, but like sometimes a little break just to give yourself a reminder, yeah, these, how good they were, do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
I think there's also
helps like my top five Beatles albums, like what you were saying there about. I think it's got weaknesses, whereas there's some Beatles albums that I don't think have weaknesses.
Yeah,
it won't be like my top five or top six. But if you compare that to other bands, it's still better than everything else virtually everybody else has produced. So it's like,
well, exactly, yeah.
Average by the Beatles standards is still absolutely brilliant by everybody else's.
I'll still sing along to every single word of every song, you know, like, and you know, sing along to the guitar solos and all of that kind of stuff.
That's what.
One of my favourite Beatles songs, I've Just Seen a Face, is one of my favourite Beatles songs, especially in terms of McCartney. I just love it. But it's one of them ones that your average person won't know it. Like, obviously, I know you've got Beatles fans that will know it, but your average person that's just into music in general, they won't know I've Just Seen a Face.
Yeah.
Yeah, they won't, yeah.
Well, I remember, I think that's one of those where when you get into the Beatles, whatever age that is, and you just know, like, most people know the Red Album back when we were younger, but might be different now, might be One now or whatever, but you know that Greatest Hits album. And then, you know Yesterday, you've heard Yesterday a million times.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's weird that Yesterday and I've Just Seen a Face are right next to each other on this album. I think that's weird track listing. But anyway,
it doesn't flow, does it?
It's weird, I think. And two solo McCartney songs right after each other. But anyway, the first time you hear I've Just Seen a Face, you kind of go, what the fuck? Well, how do I not know this song? How does nobody know this song? Like,
there's a lot like that are hidden away.
Yeah.
And that never would get close to a Greatest Hits or the Red and Blue albums, like the compilation albums, like you say. But I've Just Seen a Face, for example, that, again, on the other side of the ocean, in America, that opened Rubber Soul, I've Just Seen a Face.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's another peculiarity of the Beatles albums, isn't it?
But there's a few like that around this era. And again, you think something like that, if you had I've Just Seen a Face and, say, Ticket to Ride on our version of Rubber Soul, all of a sudden that's just elevated to that album would just be elevated to another level again.
It has also made this album 10 times worse if you do that.
Well, yeah. it'd be struggling, wouldn't it?
No, I mean, look, we're being harsh, and like you say, by most people's standards, this is a fantastic album. You just look at the track list and, you know, Help to open it. I mean, what a song. But then you've got Hide Your Love Away, and taking a ride on the first side, fantastic. I think the second side suffers. If it didn't have Yesterday on, then there's really no songs on there that a lot of people would know. You've mentioned before, like, the speed of them bringing out Hard Day's Night and this, and in the middle, they've done albums and they've got to write these songs, and they're on tour. They are rushed. Like, how they managed to do what they did.
If you Help, he just wrote that for the film, didn't he, in a day?
Yeah.
Or something. John Lennon, so... They're just Dick, all rushed, aren't they?
Dick Lester told him what the film was going to be called. He said, this is what we're going to call it. Sort it out, basically.
Just write a song. I mean, it's amazing that the pace that they're working at, and it's amazing
all the way through. No wonder they were burnt out and, like, you know, did try to do stuff to escape their routine and all of that kind of stuff, and and totally
stopped
fed up of it.
Yeah, you can see why George in particular was getting a bit narky towards, like, the late 60s, can't you? Like, he just had enough of having McCartney on one shoulder, maybe talking to it at times. And I'm looking forward to the Get Back film coming out.
Yeah,
because I think that will dispel some myths about all that sort of falling out and the bad mood. I know George could be grumpy at times, but
I love George, and I think he obviously has got a good sense of humour. And you know, you don't get to make the Life of Brian films and all of that kind of stuff without it. And he's obviously sarcastic and caustic and all of that kind of stuff. But he's very pious at the same time. He's like both ends of the spectrum. Like, he gets really pissed off with everything, and he's really preachy, while he's a bit hypocritical, I think, sometimes. I mean, everybody is to some extent. But I think George is one of those characters where you're like, peace and love and Buddha and all that. You're shagging around and you're doing loads of coke.
Why the fuck not, man?
Well, you know, when you're a Beatle, I suppose. All right. And he wears a top hat in this film, which is super.
He does.
Again, that looks smart. That looks smart, doesn't it? When they're going down on that sledge, and he's got that.
Yeah, he's got
that's one of the things about this film is, I presume it's the first time loads of people had seen them in anything other than the suits that they'd be wearing on TV shows and stuff like that. Because, like you say, it's only very recently where they've done the Royal Variety performances and all of that kind of stuff, and those tours that they're very much Epstein's, like, boys wearing the collarless suits and all of that. And in this, they're in jeans, T-shirts.
I was just about to say they're in jeans. You think back to even now, of all you've seen ever of the Beatles, you don't see much of them where there's shots of them in jeans.
It's unusual. Yeah. Paul McCartney, in particular, looks a bit weird in jeans and a T-shirt.
And I sometimes think, were jeans just not that big a thing in the 60s? Because the main band that you think of, the Beatles, you never really saw it. But they obviously were, but it's just...
Yeah. I particularly liked John Lennon's brown suede jacket.
Yeah,
that's very nice. Loved. Yeah.
But again,
it moved into Rubber Soul afterwards. He's got it on there, hasn't he?
Yeah, but also if you look at, like, David Crosby and people like that, they're all dressing like these guys after this film comes out. The Birds all dress like this or whatever, you know, like the.
And we've got to talk about the hair. The hair is.
Who's your favorite hair in the film?
Well, I like the McCartney's hair at the start where he comes out the house. He looks a bit Noel Gallagher. Well, Noel Gallagher looks a bit like him, I would say.
Paul's always my favourite from a hair point of view, but then there is the odd moment. Like, at one point, you see George, like, sort of front on, and his hair is huge. It's like taking on the size of it, and you think I do think I'd love some volume like that, because I've lost all my volume now. That's why I've got the hat on. I've still got some length, but there's no thickness to it. And watching these films, it does nothing for your sort of self confidence in that sense.
No,
not from the hair point of view.
We'll need to go and buy those 60s Beatles wigs, don't we, that used to sell. Just walk around with them on.
Ringo's, on the other hand, just weird. Just weird.
He's just let it go, hasn't he, Ringo? Completely let it go.
The shape of Ringo seems to pop out in different places at times. And it's got a mind of its own at times.
The other thing I like with Ringo was how they kept chucking him in the water, even though they knew he couldn't swim. It's like they wanted to kill him.
Well, I mean,
he keeps saying, I can't swim, I can't swim.
Apparently, he told Eleanor Bron that he couldn't swim just as they were about to jump in. And said it as they were jumping in. And she sort of questioned it as they were going in.
Yeah.
She obviously she was wearing like heavy leather at the time as well. And she was already worried about she wasn't going to be able to swim. And then Ringo just mentions it as they're actually going in.
The Ringo thing is, though, that I was thinking about that. And that must have been, obviously, he was like sickly and ill as a child. Now. Yeah. He just must have never learned to swim.
That's what I was going to say, because that scene where. They're in the army thing and the tanks and all of that stuff are going past. Like, they all look freezing and that, but there's one bit where Ringo looks like he's going to cry. He's so cold. Like, it's the first shot of that song, and it's a close-up of him, and he genuinely...
He's like shaking, isn't he?
Yeah, it looks like it's a joke, but it's not. Like, he's just him playing the drums.
I don't think he'd be as cold as what Mal Evans was when they were in Austria and he was in the... In the middle of the snow. Because apparently they made Mal Evans film that a few times. Like, the first time. And he's like, is this risk of hypothermia here? Oh, no, we need another take.
Yeah, I mean, look, we said there's... Can you nitpick with the film? Can you nitpick with the album? Absolutely. But really, they both
bring... It's the Beatles, man.
It's the Beatles.
And it's great.
And they both bring all of us a lot of joy and, you know, the fun. And we could talk about it all day and every other album and every other film, I'm sure. We've only got a few minutes left with the three of us on before I need to close it down, because I'm not paying for premium Zoom.
Why should you?
Well, we're going to say goodbye and then introduce you again in a fashion in about 5 minutes' time. So thank you very much, Luke. Take care.
Nice one.
Thanks for recommending Help. And,
cheers, man.
Yeah, we'll speak to you again soon, I'm sure. Right, so we said goodbye to Luke. He's coming back again. Think of it as his encore. Normally what we do at the end of the show is Brett will give me an impossible quiz, which you can bear the brunt of this week. And then the end music is going to be your band, The Mariners. And because we didn't get a chance to talk much about the band, we thought we'd ask you back so you can tell us a little bit more about what you're up to, the song and all of that stuff. So, Brett. Quiz?
Mm-hmm.
Question mark?
Yeah, well, yeah, this week it's an 80s advert quiz. So I hope you're all up on stuff like that.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll let Luke answer first. If he gets the answer wrong, then you can have a go, Cliff.
I'm happy to take a back seat. Yeah, absolutely.
What sweets came in strawberry, orange, lemon, and lime and were made to make your mouth water? What do you reckon, Luke?
Opal fruits.
Oh, you've got it in one. I'll let Cliff answer the next one then. Right, you're too good.
Really hard, right?
Which beer advert threatened you could have a Lionel Blair cut like mine? Followed by the slogan, time for a sharp exit.
Yes, it's time for a cool, sharp hop.
That's right. Well done. So, Luke, you've got the next one. Which dance is guaranteed to put the freshness back?
Oh, I know it. I actually remember an advert in that where there was like 10 people all with vax in a light. Was it Shake and Vac?
Shake and Vac, it was. Yes. Wow, he's doing well here, aren't you? He's doing well here. Cliff, this one's for you then.
Right.
Which drink advised you to shake the bottle to wake the drink?
Why am I in all drinks? Oh, this is...
I don't know. Right? Just the way it's worked out. We didn't plan for this.
I mean, I don't know, but I presume it's Orangina.
It is Orangina. Jesus. Is that doing well, aren't you? this one's for you then, Luke. Which advert advised wives to purchase products for their husbands that could drive into anything... almost if it wasn't there, or to really surprise them, get them a stripper.
What? You can't have said that. You know, there's got to be a better way to say that question.
No better way to say that question.
It was a bit long-winded, wasn't it?
It was a little bit. There you go.
I'm gonna guess, and the only reason I'm guessing is on the word stripper. I'm gonna go for a Black and Decker.
Black and Decker, did you say?
Yeah.
He did. He's right, isn't he?
Oh, nice one.
These questions have been kind to me because I wouldn't have got either of your two, Paul.
Come, do you want look to have the last one, or would you like to take it, Cliff?
Well, why
would you like to
take
pass
it
over
to a buzzer system?
A buzzer system. How are you going to work that out? What are you going to do? Know. Squeech like a banshee. Put your hand up. Well, you can both just shout the answer out.
Okay.
Which advert featured a skeleton which told you you could re-record and not fade away in the style of good old Buddy Holly?
Panasonic.
Oh, Cliff.
I'm doubting myself now. I was so confident 2 minutes ago. I think it's Toshiba.
Oh, yes, are both wrong.
Is it not
he's
Toshiba?
Both everything. Ah, it's Scotch, I'm
Scotch.
Afraid.
Scotch.
Bastards.
Yeah. So I'm sorry you've lost all
it's
your
all right.
prizes.
I came with nothing.
Yeah.
I've had a great day.
But you still get your bully.
You've got some new stuff coming out. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the band and what you do and all of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so we the first album came out, like you say, about a year ago now, and we sent you one of the singles. And we kind of only released it for ourselves, really. We never thought anything had come of it, really. But one or two of the songs did quite well on like social media, got a bit of traction, and we always wanted to have just a copy of our own album on a vinyl record. That was always just a dream. If it meant that we had to pay 80 quid for one individual copy, so we had one each, mm-hmm. so to speak. We never dreamt that we'd end up like doing a mass produced and selling them, but people put requests in, so we did it. And during lockdown, we'd already started working on the second album when the first one was released. So that's what we're in the process of now. And we've had two singles out from it, and we're about to play the third one from the new album. And the new album's out in, it's been delayed, it's been put back till June. Yeah. Sometimes you end up being on a lot of shows or a lot of radio stations at once. And as a band, you can't possibly listen to everything you've been on. It's just not possible.
Mm. Yeah.
For some reason, there was a night where I was sat down doing some artwork, because I also do artwork, and I was sat down doing some artwork and I wanted something to play. So I whacked the episode on that we were going to feature on yours. And I didn't know whether we were going to be on at the start, in the middle, at the end. So I just whacked it on. I thought I'd listen to it. And it got to the end, uh-huh. and I thought that whole episode, I really enjoyed it. And then I almost forgot that we were tagged on the end. I noticed since saying, obviously, you've had a lot of bands that we know, a lot of bands that we follow. And there's been one or two artists that we don't follow that I've heard you play, and I've been like, then found them for yourselves. So podcasts and radio stations do the sort of thing you're doing, just helps spread a little bit of the word.
Plus,
that's
good.
Plus, like, look, it means that me and Cliff are turning into John Peel, doesn't it? So this might be a stupid question, and it probably is a stupid question.
God.
But me and Cliff love live music and stuff like that, and would love to see you guys play. Have you got any ideas of playing live, sort of, in your head?
I'm going to bet it's not going to be in Dubai.
We was asked about a year ago to do a gig in Manchester, and we was given an original date and a provisional date. Well, we're now on the second provisional date, but it is happening later this year in September. And all being well, that's going ahead.
Oh,
and
nice.
then there's and that was off a radio show that we was on, where we did a bit of an interview, and they decided to put their own night on. And then we've got our own night that was going to originally be our album launch. So we'd penciled in an album launch. That then obviously got put back. So we then changed it to what was going to be a socially distanced gig last November, but that got put back again. So we're looking at just confirming some dates for that at the minute, but we're expecting sort of summertime.
Do you want to introduce the song? Tell us a bit about it, and we'll get it played.
Yeah, this is the third single from our forthcoming album. The album is called Tales from the Great Central Line, Volume 1. And so far we've had Dear Genevieve, that was the first single, and that was written about my daughter, just about basically becoming a father. Then we had There Before Time, which was a song that we did about the Great Central Railway and the old systems in the 60s and 70s. And then this is the third single, which you're going to play now, which is called Jennifer. Just a good feel, poppy love story, really.
Yeah, it's nice. I've had it on a few times today. It's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Luke. Appreciate you being on. Appreciate the song.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, everyone. This is Jennifer, like Luke says, and we'll see you next time. Bye bye.
Nice one. Bye. Cheers, gents.
Just found out her name is Jennifer. The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.